Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's our family meeting on punishment on The Brian Lehrer Show. We'll talk to a historian of punishment coming up. Right now, we're very pleased to have with us the Chief Judge of New York State, Jonathan Lipman, who's been advocating for a change in the way the state punishes 16-year-olds. Hi, Judge Lipman. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. My pleasure to be here.
What happens with 16-year-olds today?
Well, we're only one of two states in the country that treat 16-year-olds as adult criminals. And I believe that when you treat kids as criminals, you stand a strong chance of making them into criminals. And this is the worst thing that we can possibly do. Kids are kids. They do silly things. We don't treat them as criminals. It's a mistake. Recognizing that adolescent brain development is different than adults. Kids don't weigh risks and consequences. So that's why I think that it is long, long overdue, 50 years overdue, that we raise the age of criminal responsibility in New York to 18, as so much of the country already has.
Well, you say kids do silly things. In our last segment, we heard about kids who didn't clean up their room, kids who were late for haircuts. You're talking about kids who are coming to court for one reason or another.
Yeah, these are kids who may do graffiti, or they may jump a turnstile, or they may do, you know, other things that are crimes. And crime does have consequences, but if the consequence is to take a kid who has a nonviolent violation of the law and treat them as an adult criminal, and actually, in the worst case scenario, actually sending them, incarcerating them, I think society and our government is making a terrible mistake, because scientists, the Supreme Court of the United States, we all understand that children are different. Their minds are not fully developed, and they don't think the way we do as adults. And it doesn't mean that we totally say, hey, listen, you can get away with anything. But we certainly, to me, the worst thing you can do is to throw them into the adult criminal justice system and ultimately even possibly incarcerate them is, to me, being not tough on crime, it's being silly on crime. And because kids are silly, we as a society and as a criminal justice system, we don't have to be silly, and we are the adults. And we should understand what's best in the long range for our children, which are our greatest resource. You know, what we do today by treating 16-year-olds as adult criminals is we're taking away the American dream before they even get there. We're treating them in a way that can result, and I'm not saying it always does, but can result in our actually becoming adult criminals.
Judge, did you say that New York is one of only two states in the country that automatically tries 16-year-olds as adults?
Yes, North Carolina is the only other state, and even they are on the verge of reform. So for New York to be in this position, you know, Brian, 50 years ago when we had the Family Court Act in New York, for the time being, they decided to make the age of criminal responsibility 18. We were going to study the issue, and more than 50 years later, we're still studying the issue, which for a state like New York, a progressive state, is totally wrong and I think counterproductive.
Listeners, should New York stop treating 16-year-olds as adults automatically when they have contact with the criminal justice system? 212-433-WNYC. Anybody listening have a story of being or having been 16, or maybe you had a kid who was 16 who got in trouble with the law and things turned out worse because they were treated as adults rather than as juveniles? 212-433-9692 for the Chief Judge of New York State, Jonathan Lipman, who wants to change that. And we can go beyond this narrow question to a broader one, too. Has American society gone too far in punishing teens as adults? Have we gone too far in locking people up or punishing people in general when they're young in our criminal justice system? And also, we'll get into this, how do you see race as a factor in this conversation? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Judge Lipman, do you see race as a factor in this conversation?
I think that our society is one that has that as an upfront issue that we deal with. I think sometimes it plays into the equation and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, what we strive for in the criminal justice system is that we are blind in terms of race, gender, orientation, etc.
We know young blacks and Latinos get the brunt of this, right? 16-year-old.
We would be totally holding our hands over our eyes to not realize that a great majority of young people interacting with the criminal justice system are black and Latino, and that's a fact, and that's not something that we guess about. And the question is, you know, why is that? Are there societal reasons? Is it policing reasons? Is it the policies of the criminal justice system? There's no easy answers, but what I know is whether someone is black, Latino, white, whatever, treating them in a way that is counterproductive to the goals of society is so wrong. And I give you an example of something that cuts across all lines in society. We have often, when young people are convicted of a crime, that crime tars them for the rest of their life, even if it's a nonviolent crime, even if it's something that they don't do jail time for. And that's why we have a in addition to the legislation we're seeking to raise the age of criminal responsibility, we also have a bill to expunge criminal records of people who often do something wrong in their younger years. And we think when it's nonviolent, we have a bill that says after 7 years, you should expunge a single misdemeanor conviction. And what I mean by expunge is it's not when you apply for a job, when you want to go to school, it you would not have to give that as a conviction. And for 10 years for a nonviolent felony, after you do it, if you have no other convictions, we think it should be expunged under the same principle that you don't want to let one mistake that someone makes as a young person just ruin their lives.
Right.
And that's why in our bill on treating young people as juveniles and not as adults, under the bill we have, they don't have a record when they come out.
And
there's no criminal conviction.
It's
like we have in the family court today, that there's no convictions. It's the same thing, whether it's ensuring that you don't have a record in the first place, or after the fact, when you've been a good citizen, when you make a stupid mistake as a young person, let's clean up your record, because what are we about as a society?
Really, and this is very, very much in the news these days. As I'm sure you know, there are big campaigns underway to ease up on nonviolent low-level young offenders in various ways. The Ban the Box campaign, as it's known, so potential employers can't have that box on every job application for the rest of your life that says, have you ever been convicted of a crime? You're talking about expunging after 7 years, 10 years.
Yes,
some people would go farther.
Our bill is very much in the same vein, that whether it's housing or schools or jobs, why are we doing this? What is the societal purpose to it? And that's exactly right. I think it's the more enlightened view. I think it's the scientific view that tells us we do things when we're younger that are just due to, again, our adolescent brain development is not as full and mature as an adult.
And
when we do something, we are expected to understand the risks and the consequences of what we do.
And there's the campaign.
Younger people don't always weigh things in that way, and it's because their brain is not fully developed.
I think we're at a moment of big societal rethink I believe, on this, Judge. I think you're part of leading a movement here. There's the campaign that we didn't mention yet to make sure ex-felons can vote again after they've served their time. They can in New York State, but not in some states. Cory Booker and Rand Paul are on that together in the U.S. Senate. In New Jersey, Governor Christie just this week made bail easier for low-level offenders because too many poor people, often teenagers, were actually spending time behind bars after their arrest for little tiny things.
Well, let me say, Brian, we have the other bill that we have, which I'm so happy you brought up, is a bill about bail, where we think it is crazy that people can't make $500 bail and they're kept incarcerated and it works against them in the criminal justice system. They're nonviolent. They're not a threat to flee the jurisdiction. Why are we doing that? So what our bill provides is it changes the presumption. Instead of the current statutory framework, where the presumption is that essentially you go to jail if you can't make bail, our presumption, what we propose is, if you're nonviolent, if you're no threat to society, you should be out on the street, whether it's you can do things like a supervised release program. But the reason why our system, to some degree, doesn't work is it's a profit motive system. The bail bondsman doesn't make money on $500 bail. And poor people can't make it, can't get from the bail system a bond, and they stay in jail, they lose their job, they're separated from their family, and it's all, again, I think you're right, it's part of a new way of thinking about these things. Look, I'm the first one, as the chief judge of this state, to tell you that when people are a threat to society, we incarcerate them. And when people commit violent crimes, we put them in jail where they can't hurt people. But why we extend that to young people and people who are no threat to anybody and play such a negative role in their lives to have the criminal justice system do that, that's not the purpose of what we do.
Are you saying that the bail bondsman lobby is more powerful in Albany than you are?
Well, I don't know if I hope not, but certainly the bail bondsman lobby does not particularly like the bill that we have. And you know what, Brian, I say this sincerely. I'm not, my goal is not to make them the target or to put them out of business. But if you're telling me that a poor person who hasn't, again, is not violent, shouldn't be out on the street with his family and in his job because they can't come up with these minimum amounts of bail, something is wrong with our system. And the bail system in New York, the pre-trial justice system in New York must be changed. This is it's backwards. People should be with their families in their jobs unless they're going to hurt other people. And if they are, then we keep them incarcerated. And do you know that the bail system in New York is so backwards that even on the other end of the spectrum, the judge is not permitted to consider public safety in the decision as to whether or not to give bail. So on both ends, it's crazy. Yeah. The judge can't consider public safety to protect people. And on the other side, you have people who wouldn't hurt a fly and are staying in jail because they can't make, you know, $500 in bail. And there's something wrong. You know, when we put out that bill, the New York Times had a headline and the article saying the chief judge says bail system in New York unsafe, unfair, and that's what it is. On both regards, it is wrong, it is backwards, it is, to me, antiquated, and we have to change it, and we have to change our view of how we treat juvenile offenders, and we have to change our view when someone commits a crime at a young age, we shouldn't punish them for the rest of their lives.
And that discretion on the part of a judge to take public safety into account is exactly part of the bill that got signed into law in New Jersey this week. So somehow Chris Christie has gotten out ahead of New York State on this.
There's no question. You hit the key word, Brian. Discretion, judicial discretion is what one of the things that we think is so important. The public has nothing to fear. when criminal justice issues are in the discretion of the judge. Look at the Rockefeller drug laws. We argued for many years, give judges the discretion to lessen these draconian penalties for very, very small offenses with small amounts of drugs. We need the discretion. And eventually, the legislature in New York came around to that way of thinking. And on all these other issues, juvenile justice, bail, expungement, we need some positive, forward-looking thinking that looks at the world as the way it exists today and not has some rigid view of what's soft or what's tough on crime. Right. We have to be smart on crime.
Well, here's how much
question that all of these things are, again, of one common piece that says what is society's interest in a lot of these criminal justice issues that affect incarceration, our young people, whether you keep people in the criminal justice system or let them out on the street to be with their families. Right. This requires some thinking that's in keeping what modern criminal justice theories are, and I think New York should be at the forefront of those efforts and not lagging behind.
The Chief Judge of New York State with us, Jonathan Lipman. Let me go broader on that question of modern criminal justice theory. As Chief Judge in New York State, do you get philosophical on this? Do you ask yourself, what is punishment for? And would my grandfather have answered the question the same way?
Oh, absolutely. Our job is to think out of the box. I think the judicial system knows a lot about criminal justice issues and about punishment and all of the myriad of issues that come into play. And yes, we have to think about what we're doing and what it means, and not just, we don't say in the
court. So what is punishment for?
Punishment is for if it serves a remedial purpose. If there's a purpose that's going to impact positively on society. It's not punishment for the sake of punishment. And that's, I think, where we make our mistake.
And when we talk to a historian of punishment later on, we're going to find out that in the not-so-distant past, it was, and it is sometimes still today, for much more than that, much more than the protection of other people and the rehabilitation. It's for retribution for its own sake, even sometimes for the entertainment or pleasure or feeling of satisfaction of the punishers. You don't have to get into that if you don't want, but we will with a historian of punishment in a few minutes.
My view, Brian, is it has to have a productive, positive societal purpose. And it's not just, I don't believe that it is punishment for punishment's sake. I think that it has to be meaningful. It can be a deterrence, Brian. And criminal justice theory includes the fact that, you know, sometimes you have to punish so that you don't have an epidemic of violent crime or whatever. You have to deter people. And you know all of the a controversy back and forth about the death penalty. Is the death penalty a deterrent? Does it something that stops other people from doing that kind of murderous, violent
and even
conduct?
Life
and
without parole.
Very different scientific views of that. But in New York, as in most states in the country, there is no death penalty because in our state, ultimately, there was, as you remember, the death penalty was passed, reintroduced to New York a number of years ago, and then the high court, my court, ruled the statute as unconstitutional for various reasons. But the point is, that's a perfect example of where some would argue that punishment is a deterrent. You cannot let this kind of conduct go unpunished. But you know what? I don't think there's any argument about whether we should let that when a young person jumps a turnstile. You know, I don't think there's a good argument that we need to put that person in jail so that it can be a deterrent to other young people not to jump turnstiles.
And I want to say, I want
to. The modern way of thinking is you give that kid some help, you get him into a, him or her into a community program that helps him, helps his family, and that that young person becomes a productive citizen.
I want to say,
I think there are good arguments both ways
before,
on certain really high-level kinds of violent conduct and what you do about it and when you punish and when you don't, and certainly violent crime is a threat to our society, and we don't want people who are going to hurt other people walking the street. But many of these issues, Brian, are just not controversial. They're simple. You take someone who is convicted of some white-collar crime or whatever as a young person that didn't hurt anybody, that was a mistaken judgment, and then you say 10 years later that you can't go to school or you can't get into...
And, Judge, before we run out of time, I want to say one other thing as you... frame this around teenagers about why I think race matters here historically and why perhaps we're coming to a more enlightened conversation about this now. I remember the 90s when teen violent crime was high and the tabloids would publish photos of dark-skinned young New Yorkers and call them super predators. That was a term for minors who committed violent crimes, super predators. And in that era, some of the tougher sentencing laws were passed. But when those suburban high school shootings, like at Columbine, happened, the same media asked, how are we failing our kids? What's wrong with us? What's wrong with society that kids are randomly shooting up their classmates? The white suburban shooter kids were presumed innocent, presumed to be outcomes of society, while the black perps were super predators responsible for their own behavior like aliens from a horror movie. That's an old story, but I think it applies, and maybe we're becoming more enlightened than that now.
Well, I think that's true. I think today we do hopefully ask the tougher questions, but, you know, we changed our laws, Brian. In those years that you're talking about, our laws became that young people who committed very violent crimes, and that's not what we're talking about in the bill that we have before the legislature. If you commit murder in New York at 13 years of old age, you could be treated as an adult criminal. For rape and assault and serious violent crimes, at 14 and 15 you can. So society and the criminal justice system and our public officials reacted to those crimes at the time and with a certain response. Today we're reacting maybe in these other kinds of crimes with a more thoughtful, less, what should I say, a rigid response. But I think you're right that look, we certainly believe that the criminal justice system should be blind when it comes to race, and yet we know that a great part of the crime is committed by and against minorities in our state. And how do you respond to that? Look at all the, without getting into the details, because some of these cases, come to our courts. Look at all the controversy about stop and frisk, about broken windows and all of that. So, of course, you're right that race matters,
yes,
and we have to understand it,
and
we have to see that our reaction goes considers that and yet goes beyond that.
Right.
And look at people as human beings and not as black or white. And this is certainly the way we want the scales of justice to operate.
And there we have to leave it.
We want it to be that everyone gets a fair shake, a fair deal, that the courts are the one place where you can go, that you know you're always going to get on the merits, you're going to get justice. But what is justice, that abstract term? We have to make justice concrete for each and every young person and for every adult in our state.
And, Judge, I have to jump in because we're out of time, but I really want to thank you, Chief Judge of the State of New York, Jonathan Lipman, who started by proposing a new bill that would stop treating 16-year-olds automatically as adults in court when they're brought up on charges. Thank you very, very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Brian. My pleasure.